11th, 2014, Clean Elections, Arizona Citizens Clean Elections Commission meeting to order. Just to note, this is a day for us to remember with great respect and sorrow for those that passed 13 years ago. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the commissioners. Notice is hereby given that there will be this is a general public meeting of the Citizens Clean Elections Commission. We may vote to go into executive session, which will not be open to the public, for the purpose of obtaining legal advice on any item listed on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3. The commission reserves the right at its discretion to address the agenda matters in an order different than outlined below in the agenda. Okay, with that, let's get moving. I apologize for my tardiness and thank you for your indulgence. I seem to always be overly optimistic on my ability to transverse the Tucson Phoenix I-10 corridor. So with that, discussion and possible action, the commission minutes of the August 21st, 2014 meeting. By the way, I note that Commissioner Laird is not here, so we have four, so we do have a quorum. But he will not be joining us either live or by telephone.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the minutes of the August 21st, 2014 meeting.
I have a motion for approval of the minutes. Is there a second?
Chairman, second.
Okay. Mr. Titla, thank you. Mr. Hoffman, thank you. I will ask for a vote on it. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. That carries unanimously. Thank you. The discussion of the executive director's report. Mr. Collins, if you would, please.
Chairman Record, members, I don't want to, I know we have a lot of business on the agenda. I do want to just note that our general election debates have begun and that those are available on our YouTube channel. We are now providing closed captioning of videos for individuals that are hard of hearing. September 29th is the gubernatorial debate, which will be attended by all four candidates who are on the general election ballot. We are also working with the O'Connor House on their Debate Watch Arizona effort to encourage voters to participate in watching the debates. And then, of course, obviously that's part of an effort that we have as an ongoing basis to educate voters for the purpose of having them participate in elections. I also wanted to signal out briefly for, you know, Sarah Larson, who you all know, has been, her title for the past several years has been campaign finance manager, but in recognition of the enhanced role and that she actually has been playing for the last year, we finally have her promoted and appropriately titled as financial affairs coordinator, and I'm very pleased with that, and I think it recognizes that you know, she has taken on a great deal of responsibility, has helped us to keep the commission on track in terms of both the campaign finance matters and our internal financial matters. So we're really thrilled about that.
Yeah, congratulations, Sarah.
You can see the other information about voter education, the candidate statement pamphlets going to press next week. And we have worked to enhance that to ensure that we're covering the other materials that are out there. One of the things we've talked about in the past is the fact that you have multiple voter education opportunities throughout the state. We have worked to ensure that the candidate statement pamphlet will include materials on how voters can find out about statewide ballot propositions and merit selection, which are things that are contained in a separate pamphlet, but that corresponds with time and mailing. So we think that that's an additional material that helps make the candidate statement pamphlet a better tool for voters. I won't go over everything. That's the highlights. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Any questions for Mr. Collins?
Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Tittle.
Yeah, I'd like to express my congratulations to Sarah Larson. Good job. Mr. Collins, with regard to voter education outreach, I remember last month we had a meeting on the language issue.
Yes.
And I wonder if there was any follow-up on that. And I would like to recommend that, you know, we go to some radio stations in our area, and maybe the rest of the commissioners can do that within their respective areas.
Sure.
But I'm from eastern Arizona, and I know that in Globe, Arizona, they have a radio station called KIKO, K-I-K-O. I don't know the numbers right offhand. But on that station, they have a program called Open Line, where different people appear for an hour, I think, and they're interviewed about certain areas of interest to the public in the state. And I think that would be a good time for you and maybe I or anybody else that wants to come to appear on that program and let the people know in eastern Arizona about our program, the Clean Election Commission, because I think that this is very important information that should get out to the general public in all areas of the state. And then I think that in Safford, Arizona, that would be another good area to do than Safford, because it's way out in eastern Arizona. They have a sizable population over there, people, citizens, and I think it would be good for them to have this information. I don't know with whether the information we have here reaches out there. It might appear in a small blurb in the news or the paper, but not to the extent where, you know, the citizens would know about this law and the area that we work on. And then maybe some of the Indian reservations. I speak Apache also, which is my first language. I'm fluent in that language. So we could go into the Apache stations in the San Carlos Apache Reservation. They have a station called K-Yay, K-Y-A-Y, which is an Apache word, by the way. And, you know, they have open line there also where Apache-speaking people plus you know, other people can appear and give information to Native Americans. White Mountain Apache has that too. And I know that one of the most populationed Native tribes in the state is Navajos, and they have that in Window Rock, Arizona also. So I think that if we work more on this, I think that we can reach more and more citizens, although I think the guys are doing a good job here. But we can, I think there's room for improvement. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Tittle, Gina can give you an update about the progress on precisely those issues, and I think there is some, but it'd probably be better to do it at another, I think we'd probably do it at another time, but you guys can coordinate getting that information.
Okay. And perhaps Commissioner Tittle, you could do it. I know because we're getting into election season. I don't want to be waiting the month. I think the issue here is the urgency of it to get things moving in light of the elections coming up in less than 2 months now.
And I think, I think Gina will be able to provide, we can provide to the commission after this meeting via email or whatever an update on where we are with progress. Progress is being made and on those particular issues and without getting beyond the what's actually in this report, we'll do that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Collins, would you copy all of us,
Commissioners? Yeah, that's no problem. Yeah,
thank you.
All righty. Any other questions for Mr. Collins? Okay, there being none, let's go to agenda item number 4, discussion and possible action on MUR 14-007, Legacy Foundation Action Fund. I understand that Mr. Torchinski is on the phone, sir. Are you still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for
letting
me appear by telephone.
Yeah, our pleasure. Mr. Collins, if you would introduce it, please.
Yes, thank you, commissioners. This is a follow-up on the last two agenda items. We have been working through a complaint that was filed respecting an advertisement in the Republican gubernatorial primary. Matter has essentially two components, as the agenda indicates. There is the complaint and addressing whether or not there's reason to believe a violation has occurred, and then there is a lawsuit that's been filed by the Legacy Foundation Action Fund which Ms. O'Grady is serving as counsel for essentially both purposes. She's here. Thought I had today was to essentially have the Committee for Justice and Fairness case having been decided, to look at the recommendation that we'd made, which I had previously indicated. I believe under the legal standard that this was express advocacy, evaluate that in view of the CJF case and the supplemental materials that were provided by Mr. Turchinski and Mr. Bergen. And then decide whether or not to move ahead with that. That's the substance of the memo that's in front of you, which is my assessment of how the CJF case works within this framework, what it says, and whether or not that changes the prior recommendation that I made as far as express advocacy. And then, because in my view it does not, I would recommend moving ahead to a reason to believe stage. I think that kind of leaves things. I should mention late this week, or earlier this week, we learned that the Committee for Justice and Fairness did in fact file a petition for review with the Arizona Supreme Court. That I think I want to say was filed on Tuesday. I have a copy of it. You should be aware of that. My own view is that doesn't factor significantly in at this point, because there's no reason to believe that the Supreme Court will take review on that. That is also information that I thought I would share, and I don't think I have anything else unless you want to talk about the express advocacy issue or jump into it, however you want to.
Yeah, just before Mr. Torchinski's given the floor, again, just where we are procedurally, and sure. I think this is relevant both here and for the Horn matters, what we are looking at is a reason to believe standard. We are not making findings of fact.
Yeah.
We are not making conclusions of law. We are not doing any definitive administrative action with respect to the matter before us, MUR 14-007. What we are simply doing is deciding whether or not, given the facts as you put them, if they are uncontroverted, as you put them in the report, Mr. Collins, if they are uncontroverted, does that give us a reason to believe that a violation of the statute has occurred? And that's all we're doing. And that would then trigger an investigation into further matters, to do further fact-finding that would then be presented to the Commission for its own decisions with regard to whether or not what those facts are and what the violations are. But we are not at the point of making a final determination. Is that a fair statement?
I think it depends. I mean, I think that's correct. I think the question of, I think the word uncontroverted is not quite exactly what we mean. I think the question is, what's the evidentiary standard that's hit here? It's not an issue whether or not it's controverted. It's an issue whether or not there's reason to believe. But that's something that Mary is here to can advise on, and then subsequently Joe can advise on the evidentiary standard. But I believe I think that's roughly correct. And I think that I would just amplify in that context that the rules that we have themselves say that a reason to believe is not an appealable agency action. So it's in fact the case that the rules, by their very terms, mean that this is not a final determination. I think that's right. And Mary is available to talk about the evidentiary standard. Frankly, if that's something that you would like more detail on,
I think
to correct me if I've stated it in any way that it is going to cause anything down there.
Okay, Commissioner Hoffman, you had a comment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was going to analogize it to an indictment stage. It may be controverted, but if there's sufficient evidence to proceed, then we continue with the reinvestigation and have a 14-day period to make a finding.
If I can make one other observation here for the record, as is indicated in the administrative record for this matter, the question of what that investigation is. That investigation is not an inquiry into the subjective intent of the people who put together this ad. Okay, so I just want to be clear about that. That not that what an investigation is depends upon what the factual issues you need to make the legal determination here. So I also want to make clear on the record, which is also in all of the written materials that have been presented thus far, that the evidentiary issue is not the subjective intent of the people who framed this ad. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Collins, you would be looking into such issues as whether the ad presented the candidate in a favorable or unfavorable light, and how it was targeted, and whether the what the placement and timing was, and whether what the content of the ad was.
We would be conducting that, and then ultimately what the amount of the purchase was, and where it ran,
Thank
and other
you.
Ads. If there were other ads that were along those lines, but I think that's fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Commissioner Kester, Commissioner Titla, do you have any questions? No? Okay. Mr. Torchinsky, did you want to say something, sir?
You know, I think the only thing I'd like to do is just briefly respond to Mr. Collins' recommendation here. I still think that Mr. Collins is misreading the Committee for Justice and Fairness decision from the court. And I, again, point out to the commission that this ad was aired more than 120 days out from the Republican primary, which takes it outside of Wisconsin Right to Life mandatory bright line time period, and is well outside the time periods that the appeals court was reviewing in Committee for Justice and Fairness. And I think that it has to be an overriding factor or an overwhelming factor in determining whether this ad, which didn't contain any words of express advocacy, constitutes express advocacy. It's almost like exactly as Chief Justice Roberts said in Wisconsin Right to Life, it's almost like Mr. Collins is suggesting here that the less the ad looks like an express advocacy ad, the more it must be express advocacy. And I point you back to Justice Roberts' quotes where he said this heads I win, tails we lose argument cannot be correct. And I think that's all I have to add at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Trozinski, could you explain that a little bit more clearly, the heads I win, tails you lose thing?
Sure. In Wisconsin Right to Life, the FEC was essentially arguing that the more the ad, you know, they were arguing that the ad was so clever and so artfully avoided magic words that it therefore had to be express advocacy, and they had expert testimony analyzing the ad, and the Supreme Court said this can't be. The ad itself either has another reasonable meaning other than to vote for or against, or it doesn't. It can't possibly be that you need someone with a PhD to come in and analyze, you know, how the ad secretly urges someone to vote for or against a candidate in an election that, by the way, in this case, is 120 days out from or more, not from when the ad aired. And Chief Justice Roberts said, this standard just can't possibly be. In other words, Justice Roberts said, what the FEC is urging here is essentially something that says the less an ad looks like an express advocacy ad, the more it must be express advocacy. And Chief Justice Roberts said that cannot stand. And I also, once again, point you to, you know, even the standards that the Chief set out in Wisconsin Right to Life, he also said, and this is subject to the bright line standards of the Electioneering Communications Statute, which is broadcast as 30 days before primary and 60 days before general. And I point you back to the fact that this ad was aired 120 days out from the election while Mr. Smith was still the incumbent mayor.
Mr. Tuzinski, I'm going to ask you a question about the, with the chair's permission, about the time period later. But how do you think Mr. Collins's analysis is parallel to what the FEC did?
I think Mr. Collins' analysis, I mean, first of all, the FEC ads were run close in time to the election. This ad was not. And I think that is probably the most significant distinction between
I'm going to come back to the timing quick. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about timing in a second. But how is Mr. Collins doing a, you know, heads win, tails you lose kind of analysis here? That's what I'm having trouble understanding.
Because what he's saying is, 120 days after the election, you couldn't have aired an ad that spoke to Mr. Smith's policy positions in an organization he was part of because he was mayor that wouldn't be express advocacy, because you criticized him, it must be express advocacy, is essentially what Mr. Collins is saying.
You think he's saying that for any ad in any time period?
I think he's coming pretty close to saying once someone's a candidate, if you wear advertisements criticizing them after they've declared themselves a candidate, it's going to be really tough to air an ad that doesn't meet the standards that Mr. Collins has laid out for that.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That's helpful in analyzing the issue that has to be raised. And I guess in the investigation, assuming we vote to proceed, we can try to have Mr. Collins clarify the particular characteristics that make this ad different from permissible commentary ads. Let me ask you about the timing. Are you saying that because the ad is longer than a certain period, it's like a bright line thing, it can't be express advocacy, or are you saying that this is a factor that we ought to consider?
I'm saying that in an advertisement that doesn't contain express words or even identify somebody as a candidate, the timing of the ad far out from the election, the fact that it identified the issues really needs to be considered. There were no...
Considered as a factor?
If we aired an ad in April that said, defeat Mayor Smith in the upcoming election, I have no doubt that outside the 30-60-day window, you could reasonably conclude that that was an express advocacy advertisement.
Okay.
That's not what happened.
So just to clarify, you view it as a particularly important factor?
Exactly.
Okay.
I would point you to the language in footnote 7 of Wisconsin Rights Life, where the Chief Justice said, this is subject to the bright line rule of Section 203 of BCRA, which was that it had to be a broadcast ad within 30 days of the primary or 60 days of the general. So the court viewed it as the court viewed it as a bright line rule.
Well,
I'm telling you, I think it probably can be a factor, but I'm telling you the Supreme Court said it's a bright line rule. For ads that don't include express advocacy.
Okay, you're...
Sorry, for ads that don't use magic words express advocacy.
Yeah, that's the original comment that kind of confused me about it, because you were talking about this bright line comment by the Supreme Court and then yet referring to this as a factor. But for purposes of our analysis, you're satisfied that it's a factor and you believe an important one?
I would say yes, incredibly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Trudzinski. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Commissioner Kester.
For Mr. Trudzinski again, if we take sort of your side, we'll say, and say it isn't express advocacy, but there was an ad run at a time period, I guess what I would like to hear you say is, what was the purpose of the ad? Was it to remove him as mayor, although he was going to quit like a week later? Was it to criticize his stance as the president of the mayor's conference that happened 8 or 9 months previous? I just want to understand if it wasn't to degrade his efforts as running for governor, what was the purpose of the ad? It's still unclear to me as why was that ad run at all?
I think the text of the ad speaks for itself, and I again point you back to Wisconsin Rights of Life. You're again attempting to engage in the subjective analysis of why, subjective analysis of intent as to why an ad was run, when you have the ad in front of you, and the Supreme Court said you're really supposed to look at the ad itself and not inquire into subjective intent. I mean, a number of people were probably involved in the production of that ad. Each person might have had a different thought in their head. So how you get to one particular overriding intent, I don't know how you would do that without a massive investigation that included depositions of everybody involved in producing the ad, financing the ad, editing the ad. I mean, you're asking me to tell you what the subjective intent is of what was probably a quite a number of people, and I don't know that I'm in a position to do that, or that you even have the authority to inquire into that.
What is the, to ask Mr. Kessler's question a different way, Mr. Chair, Mr. Tuzinski, what would you say you would like us to consider as the alternative meaning of the ad? In other words, we have no reasonable meaning other than to advocate election. What are the reasonable meanings other that you would like us to consider during the either the current hearing or the investigation?
I think the ad itself was calling, I mean, the ad itself, by its own term, was calling on Mayor Smith to adopt policies for the National Conference of Mayors that were more conservative than the positions that he allowed to be adopted by the National Conference of Mayors during his tenure as president. I think the text of the ad speaks for itself. And they're clearly, I mean, the ad didn't refer to, I mean, Mr. Collins' position here is that there is no other reasonable interpretation of the ad. The ad itself didn't reference the election, didn't mention that Mayor Smith was a candidate, didn't talk about electoral voting. I mean, there was nothing in that ad that even suggested that anybody knew anything with respect to the election. It didn't even identify the mayor as a Republican or Democrat.
Chairman?
Yes, sir, Mr. Titlin.
I think that we watched the ads here on the screen a couple months ago. To refresh my memory, I wonder if I'd like to request that we watch it again, if possible.
Yeah, we can, if with the chairman.
You have them?
We can get it.
Okay, let's do it.
While we're waiting, Mr. Chair, I would like to request that staff send a copy of the petition for review that was filed in the CGF case to circulate it to the commissioners.
On the Court of Appeals. So.
The petition for review of the Court of Appeals decision, yeah.
Right, okay.
I don't know if staff heard that.
Yeah, I was just looking to see. Paula, did you catch that? Yeah, okay, thanks.
While we're waiting, can I also make one other point?
Sure, please, go ahead.
941 sub D exempts from reporting with the Clean Elections Commission any ads that were done in compliance with the section in 901 that requires reporting of independent expenditure ads. And the Secretary of State's office concluded that this wasn't express advocacy. So, you know, we're really saying that anybody that, if the commission goes forward and says this is express advocacy, what the commission is really doing is setting up a situation where every ad that gets there, if somebody makes a complaint, is going to be subject to two independent determinations about whether an ad was an express advocacy ad or not. And, you know, we already have a case here where the Secretary of State's office, you know, with the Maricopa County sort of substituting for them, concluded that this was not an express advocacy ad, and ads that are done in compliance with the express advocacy, you know, rules and reporting are not subject to disclosure with the commission.
Mr. Chairman, this is not going to. It's on. If assuming the ad's still on YouTube, it's there. I'm not going to.
Okay,
be able
let's
to,
let's not hold up the meeting anymore. We'll have a chance, I'm sure, Commissioner Titlin, to look at it later. And again, I want to emphasize what we're looking at here is a reason to believe whether or not an investigation should commence. We aren't making a final decision. And
can I have one?
Sure, Mr. Collins.
I think there are just, and I don't want to get necessarily if, with the commission's indulgence. There are three legal points I think I need to briefly make. Response to Mr. Churchinski. First, the Wisconsin Right to Life case involves a absolute ban on corporate communications that met that under the BCRA. There is nothing in our statute that suggests that this is a disclosure issue. So the analogy to Wordle on its face is simply not it's not as persuasive as one would say.
And as I recall from your memo, what we're talking about is a very lower standard because it's disclosure, not one in which it's a ban on speech altogether.
And then related to that, I think we've laid out the objective factors. We've specifically cited what Justice Roberts said about what was subject to an objective overview, and this is specific to that. And then lastly, with respect to the last point that Mr. Turchinsky made, in the original recommendation I detailed, notwithstanding what Maricopa County Elections did, we don't know what the authority they did that under is. We don't, and we know that it was referred by the Secretary of State, but I don't know what the authority for that referral was, so it's not clear to us what the basis for that decision was. And then the second point is that 16941D does in fact say that notwithstanding any other law, a person who makes an independent expenditure over the threshold must make a report unless some other circumstances apply, but that is a question of what the compliance is. And determining compliance with 16941D is always and has to be inherently under the Clean Elections Act a question for the Clean Elections Commission to make. And I think that point, in effect, when the commission previously determined it had jurisdiction over this complaint, is already subsumed in this determination. So yeah. I think that taken together, I would just make those three points.
No, and I think to second the last point is that we've heard a lot about being subject to two masters with regard to this, one being the Secretary of State and the other being us, in a lot of context, this being one. But I was just looking at the statute, and again, 16941 is expressly within the Clean Election Statute, clearly within our jurisdiction, so I'm not that concerned about there being a quote type of double jeopardy here on that. Yes, Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask Mr. Collins if, as part of the investigation, assuming again that we pass this motion, that he inquire of the Maricopa County officials who made a determination that it was not express advocacy and find out what the stated reasoning was so that that can be taken into consideration. And
I don't see, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hoffman, I don't see any reason why I couldn't do that.
Okay. All righty. I think we've discussed this plenty. Everybody's had their say. I would like to invite a motion with regard to the recommendation of the Executive Director.
I'd like to move in MUR 14-007, Legacy Foundation Action Fund, that we find reason to believe that a violation of statute or rule over which the commission has jurisdiction has occurred, and that authorize Mr. Collins to conduct an administration pursuant to our rules.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Chairman, I second the motion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Titla. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion among the commission?
I wanted to ask Mr. Collins, Mr. Chair, if we needed anything specific with regard to a subpoena, or is there?
I think if that were necessary, the way the rules are set up is at this point it would be up to, well, I think it would be up to my judgment whether or not anything would issue, and with respect to, so no additional language to the motion, no.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty, then there being no further discussion, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor of the motion as seconded, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Turchinsky. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Item number...
Leaving the meeting.
Jason?
Item... Excuse me. I apologize for the coughs. I had a flu with a capital F. And it has not left me yet. Item 5, discussion and possible action on independent expenditure reporting activities of political committees and other entities. We will be looking at Rule R220-109 and related amendments. Mr. Collins, if you would please introduce it.
And I will try to move through this quickly, as quickly as I can. I know there's other issues. What I to kick this off, we do have a PowerPoint that we're going to try to get back now. But to just kind of give you a sense of what this is about, at our last meeting, I described to you some of what had been occurring with respect to independent expenditure reporting in the state of Arizona, with respect to corporate entities making filings. And what I said that I would do would be what we needed to do was take a step back and look at where we were in view of precisely the issue, in view of the issues related to where the Secretary of State is, to make sure that, you know, we move forward in a manner that's effective. That review for the short term resulted in me looking at the rules. I want to do the PowerPoint. I'll try to move through it just as quickly as humanly possible, just to ground things a little bit, if that's okay. I'll try to move quickly.
Please.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history of independent expenditure reports, the current status enforcement, the clean elections rules, and the recommendation that I make. We're talking first about the Clean Elections Act reports 16941D and 16958. These reports were added by voters in 1998 in the Clean Elections Act, and they established more timely reporting of expenditures above a threshold set by the Act. And the rules require reports of all persons. So the Commission rules made clear, and the statute itself says this, but that persons included corporations and membership organizations. So at that time, and this is in 1998, even if no statute authorized corporate and union independent expenditures, they would have had to be reported to the Clean Elections Commission if they'd been made. And they were. And I should be very clear here. When we talk about reporting to whom the report is made, the report is always made to the Secretary of State's office. The issue is, who has the authority to tell you to file the report? And under Article 2 of Chapter 6 of Title 16, it is the Clean Elections Commission that has the authority to order people to file reports. So in that sense, the Secretary of State's office is the post office for purposes of the Clean Elections Act, and we are the Clean Elections Commission. For purposes of other provisions of law, the Secretary of State's office is both the post office and the enforcer. But for us, they're the post office. And it also exempted, and it's also important to make clear that this exempted internal communications that were expressly permitted by statute, but were not independent expenditures. Citizens United is a case you guys, I think, are now pretty familiar with and heard about. It was decided in January 2010. It said the corporation could not be prohibited from making independent expenditures for or against candidates. And that's a typo in their election, should be expenditures. I should have caught that, but that's what that means. But the disclosure itself remains constitutional and appropriate. We get to 2010, and this is brings us to the sort of the policy, where the policy issues start to kick in. 2010, a bill called House Bill 2788 was passed. It's the Citizens United Reaction Bill, and it created new disclosure reports for corporate and union independent expenditures. They're at a higher threshold, and they have less frequency than clean elections. That bill also purported to legalize these expenditures and to make them expressly permitted under 16920. That statute previously did not include independent expenditures but other matters. So just to really quickly click back through, when we started with the Clean Elections Act that was passed by the voters, those are very clearly included. And here we have an issue. The legal question is, what happens when you add that in 2788. We have the impression, in my review of the history of this, that legislators were told that there was no existing regulatory framework for these expenditures. And I have a quote there from Secretary Bennett that something had to be done immediately to have these reported. And I simply would say that was not correct. There was an emergency clause in that this bill passed unanimously or virtually unanimously, but the statement that something had to be done because Citizens United had created a world in which there was not going to be reporting of these expenditures was simply not true. One of the debates, then this is where we get into what's happening now with, as I understand, what's happening now with enforcement on the Secretary of State side, was what is a corporation and what is a political committee? And Mr. Bennett, in the same testimony, talked about the fact that they had some desire to distinguish between those that were political committees and were subject to reporting requirements beyond the expenditures themselves, and those that were corporations that were not going to be, and a desire to distinguish between those two things. And those statements reflect that, and those are available for you to kind of think about. We ended up with this language in statute. This statute says that any entity that makes an independent expenditure and that is organized primarily for the purpose of influencing the election and that is a combination of corporations, limited liability companies, or labor organizations, or that is a corporation, limited liability company, or labor organization that accepts donations or contributions shall file with the filing officer as a political committee as otherwise provided by law. That statute is the statute that is effectively, and there are Mike Liberti, Mr. Liberti, who you know is here, and Lisa Hauser, both of whom represent corporations that make IEs are here, and they can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this stuff, but I think that that statute is the term, is essentially the subject of where the overall regime is in terms of enforcement now. What does that statute mean, and how will it be enforced? So, earlier this year, as I reported in less detail, the Secretary of State identified several corporations that were making expenditures and essentially asked them to provide information about their expenditures. And I've tried to characterize in a summary fashion with more, and you know, probably people would quibble about this, so I don't purport to represent the positions of the entities identified here, only that I sort of, this is the upshot, I think, of what they responded to the Secretary's office by saying. And there was a variety of responses, some of which, for example, involved saying, we're, you know, here's our, why we're a social welfare organization under 501c4, and here are our 990 forms. You could look them up if you want to. Some of which said, here's all the spending we've been doing on a variety of topics, and then others that says, here's what we're spending on this and not that. So what that indicates is that there are entities out there that are making expenditures that they may have different factual circumstances, but they're also presenting very different perspectives on what the law requires them to do and what they need to demonstrate in order to show that they're complying with 16-941-02K. And that is creates, I think, what could reasonably call uncertainty in this part of the regime.
Mr. Collins, can you just say that again?
That is what creates uncertainty in this part of the regime. That is that there are multiple corporate independent expenditure entities that have been asked for this information, and what they've presented in terms of responses demonstrates that they all see a different target that they need to hit in order to determine whether or not they are meeting that very long sentence that's in 914.02K. And what I describe this as coming to close to...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yes,
yeah,
please.
Just a quick question. It is also true that they might be a political committee for other reasons, because the definition of political committee is not limited to what you just wrote.
That's correct. Well, that's correct. I mean, and when the statute itself says otherwise provided by law. So, I mean, so.
Right. So we have the definition in 901 and subsidiary definitions associated with it.
That's correct. It's a complicated analysis.
I have sympathy for the.
So what happens then is there's a reasonable cause finding made against the Arizona Free Enterprise Club. And so what that essentially says, and we've now talked about what roughly reasonable cause is in our context, and what I think the upshot of that, again, I don't I'm trying to summarize this, was we disagree and we don't believe what the Free Enterprise Club has said they are doing. And the reasons for that, I've reviewed the reasonable cause. They're not entirely clear to me, nor is it entirely clear to me which legal factors or any factors are applied to make this determination within this reasonable cause. So you now have multiple corporate independent expenditure groups who presented information to the Secretary's office, and you have a reasonable cause finding that says some things, but it's hard to discern from what it says on its face what, relating back to the statute and the multiple interpretations that have come off of it, which one of those is actually in operation. At least it's hard for me to determine that. As a result, and my understanding is that the Free Enterprise Club has, you know, essentially questioned the authority of the Secretary to ask for this information in the first place. They've made an extensive public records request from the Secretary of State, and there's been indications reported that there may be litigation ensuing. So there's now an enforcement with the Attorney General's office, which the Attorney General's office will be designating someone to look at further. And then there's the possibility of litigation between Free Enterprise and someone. I don't mean to overcharacterize what I understand from the available sort of media reports about Free Enterprise. Mike's here. If he wants to talk about that more specifically, he can. This is a long preface to say we have the actions of these various groups have created a situation in which we need to take some immediate action on our rules. Because our rules have language in them that is related to 914.02K. That's, in my view, unnecessary, and the actions of these nominal committees, or could-be committees, triggers a need to take immediate action to do that. But first, we need to go back really briefly and talk about where we are. Back last year, we amended Rule 109. We reemphasized the issue, so if anybody didn't understand what the Clean Elections Rule plays with IEs. We provided an easy option for corporations, LLCs, and unions who could not have violated 914.02 to stipulate that they would only need to file those reports. We believed that that would avoid litigation, and we made it on the record at the time, that this would avoid the situation where somebody says, I don't have to file anywhere at all. Hmm. And that, to, frankly, Mr. Turchinsky's point in the last go-round, that is Mr. Turchinsky's position. And our position is that no matter what, the Clean Elections Act says that we get to decide if you need to file Clean Elections Act reports.
Please.
Mr. Collins, there are certain entities that in fact don't have to file anywhere. In other words, if they don't make independent expenditures,
That's right. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Didn't want that to be misunderstood.
No, I know. That's right. That's right.
Thank you.
No, that's right. That under the assumption that's correct. That's correct. So here's where we end up with what I've just already said. We don't. There's no reason for this rule to be wrapped up in the Free Enterprise Club matters. So the solution is to simplify the certification, to reemphasize that the IE reports that Clean Elections calls for do not determine political committee status. We want to hold harmless the folks who are already certified. In other words, we had really good success. I would say I can't remember the final number of how many people we have currently certified. I think we only have three outstanding groups that aren't certified, two outstanding groups that are not certified. So there's no, we don't know, frankly, whether or not this change actually substantially affects those groups that are already certified. But there's no harm in just leaving them be. And then there's some cleanup what I would call Scrivener's problems that we want to clean up. And then the recommendation for an emergency is based on the fact that under a statute, if the actions of a candidate or committee demand immediate action, we may take immediate action to make this revision. And I believe that standard is satisfied here. So that gives us the recommendation. The recommendation is we pass these amendments. We make the currently outstanding corporations, LLCs, and unions aware of the amendments. We've already done a little bit of informal outreach to the attorneys for those corporations to see if we can move them through the certification process. I'd also have to modify the form itself, which is something the rules delegate to my authority, and then come back to the commission. And then we look at the free continue to monitor the Free Enterprise Club enforcement matter, and then whether it's a rulemaking or we get into a position where we make a more comprehensive statutory suggestion going after the election, you know, we can do that. So the goal here is to, again, decouple the rule, if it's extended, to the extent it is coupled at all, from the political committee issue, to and make that immediate. And then we will proceed stepwise in consultation with as many folks as we can consult with to provide an appropriate regulatory and or statutory response to the issues that have been identified over the course of the last few months in the process. So with that, it's a long preface, and we wanted to do this quickly because it we think that this is a necessary thing to do. We can revisit these rules at subsequent meetings, but we think that this change needs to be made immediately effective. And based on the actions of candidates and committees, and that's kind of all I have. Mary O'Grady's here also on this because this is related to her other representation. So, if you have legal questions, you can direct those to her, I believe. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Is there anyone here who would like to comment among the public on the proposed change? Mr. Liberty, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I just want to say one brief thing. I want to commend Mr. Collins and the Commission for reacting to the situation as it has developed. I agree with Mr. Collins, it has been confusing. And the Secretary of State's office has not provided with the regulated community with any guidelines to follow. Mm-hmm. So with that expression of gratitude, I would just like to add by saying I look forward to working with Mr. Collins on the revised form.
Okay. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Lisa Hauser from Gamage and Burnham, and I represent the 60-plus Association. I had a good conversation with Mr. Collins yesterday to better understand exactly what was trying to be accomplished here, and look forward to the time when he reaches the point where he's able to revise the form. And I expect we'll be able to wrap things up with respect to an exemption for 60-plus at that time. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
So just real quickly, Ms. Hauser, so you're, I take it, same as Mr. Liberty, favorably disposed to what is being, what the Commission is going to try to do here, what Mr. Collins is suggesting the Commission do here with these rules.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Ms. O'Grady, did you want to say anything to the commission? Go ahead, Mr. Collins.
We have a question about whether or not, in the absence of Mr. Laird and the need for unanimous, position when I was your counsel, which I am not currently, was that unanimous meant everybody here. That means, that is to say, of the people who are here. There is a question the commission needs to decide, I guess, how it wants to proceed in terms of being above any question. The commission can put this off. That's really the question that the commission would have to decide to put it off. There's nothing we can do to resolve that question today because it's a statute. Says what it says, and either you think unanimous means everybody's got to be here, or you think unanimous means everybody who is here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to move we go into executive session to address that issue, but before we do, I wanted to ask a question of whether I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought here. Mm-hmm. what would the procedure be if we're comfortable with proceeding on an emergency basis? Does that mean that we have, is there a requirement that it be put out for public comment, or does the emergency eliminate that step?
Well, that we could do one of two things. We could file it for public comment and make it an emergency. In other words, we can do both. We can take public comment and have it effective. There's nothing in the statute that requires you to select a path between those two. So one, I don't think there's anything in the statute that, I mean, at this point, I mean,
okay.
My memory of the statute there is no reason you have to pick between those two. So if you open for public comment, then 60 days hence you would vote to finalize this rule, and you could do that, and we'd be where we are. As a practical matter, I think it's pretty clear what my direction will be in terms of trying to manage the enforcement of this rule.
No, you've answered my question to the extent possible in open meeting. I'd like to move we go into executive session to discuss the issue.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I second.
Okay. Moved and seconded to go into executive session. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. I was an aye vote. I'm sorry. Okay. We'll go into executive session. I hope to be brief.
Would Ms. O'Grady and... as well as the Attorney General be available for that?
I think Ms. O'Grady is available.
Not the Attorney General?
The Attorney General's boss is in the room, so they can figure that out. I think it's Ms. O'Grady, for lack of a better way of proceeding. If you guys want to come in.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be quick, I hope.
Or five? Jeez.